This is 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 104.3 FM Philomath and Corvallis, K220HR Hood River, K282BH Philomath.
La Contessa, she has a laugh of secret. She has laugh of greater wealth and a greater poverty. She has many loves. She break a hearts. She has a heart to break. She fed a tool with a man. She live on the edge of survival when she was in a resistance and a king had a price on her head. She looked down at you soul and give you just what you need.
Tune in to The Confessional with 2 solid hours of conscience cleansing radio. Sundays at midnight, only on KBOO FM Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival. The 29th annual festival will be held this year from July 1st through 4th at Tom McCall Waterfront Park in Portland. Festival passes are on sale now, including the Blues Buddy Pass and the basic 4-day pass at early bird prices. More information about the passes, the festival, and more can be found at kboo.fm/WBF2016.
Thank you. just another day. Oh, it's just another day.
Brian Eno on The Digital Divide. Welcome to The Digital Divide. I'm your host, Rabia Yeaman. And today we're going to be hearing an interview I did a couple weeks ago with Willamette Week staff, that's freelance writer, Walker McMurdo, who's also the social media and PR representative for TechFest Northwest, coming up at the Armory, April 25th and 26th. So we're going to be talking about that conference. It's pretty exciting. But before we get started with that interview, we have a lot of tech news today, and most notably, the Panama Papers, which have received less media, television media news time than Bernie Sanders. Virtually, just a couple quick mentions, but nothing that it really deserves considering. So let's just talk a little bit about the Panama Papers. And we just heard some of that on Flashpoints today. So that was good. Edward Snowden, we all know Ed, on Twitter, where you can follow him, says the Panama Papers is a huge leak of documents. Snowden tweeted, "This is the biggest leak in the history of data journalism." And he also said, "If you're in charge of a country, keep your money in it." Snowden tweeted Tuesday. So an article by the Guardian says America can afford a universal basic income. That's Colin Holtzman wrote in today's online Guardian. If the super rich actually paid what they owe in taxes, the U.S. would have loads of money available for public services. So it's not that you're not working hard enough. It's that the money that's coming in through consumerism and capitalism, it doesn't trickle anywhere. It trickles offshore. If the Panama Papers are a leaked set of 11.5 million confidential documents that provide detailed information about more than 214,000 offshore companies listed by the Panamanian corporate service provider, I hope I say this right, Mossack Fonseca, including the identities of shareholders and directors of those companies. The documents show how wealthy individuals, including public officials, hide their money from public scrutiny. They just hide it. They hide their money. At the time of the publication, the papers identified five then heads of state or government leaders from Argentina, Iceland, Saudi Arabia, Ukraine, and the United Arab Emirates, as well as government officials, close relatives, and close associates of various heads of government of more than 40 other countries, including Brazil, China, France, India, Malaysia, Mexico, Pakistan, Peru, Romania, Russia, South Africa, Spain, Syria, and the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom was singled out by the media as being at the heart of a super-rich tax avoidance network. While the use of offshore business entities is not illegal in the jurisdictions in which they are registered, investigative reporters found that some of the shell companies may have been used for illegal purposes, including fraud, drug trafficking, and tax evasion. Probably worse. The documents were made available to the German South German newspaper, published in Munich beginning in early 2015 by an anonymous source, a whistleblower using the pseudonym John Doe. The The information documented actions going back to the 1970s and eventually totaled 2.6 terabytes of data. So given the scale of the leak, the newspaper enlisted the help of the U.S.-based International Consortium of Investigative Journalists started digging into the documents. And then the last word on this before we move on to our interview today, the last word on the Panama Papers is there's more than speculation now, but still speculation, that the information, the data was accessed, the leaked data was accessed through a website with an out-of-date plugin that made the information accessible. A cautionary tale about keeping your websites updated. Okay, folks. WordFence, an internet security firm, posted on their blog, the Panamanian law firm at the center of the so-called Panama Papers breach may have been breached via a vulnerable version of Revolution Slider. The data breach has so far brought down the Prime Minister of Iceland and surrounded Russian President Putin and Prime Minister David Cameron with controversy. It's the largest data breach in journalism history. Forbes reported that the paper was given their customers access to data via, or the Fonseca was giving their customers access to a data, to their data via web portal, very common, running the vulnerable version of possibly WordPress or Drupal. So keep your websites updated. All right, on to our interview with Walker McMurdo. This is Robbie Yeaman with The Digital Divide, and I am talking today with Walker McMurdo. We're talking about the TechFest Northwest coming back this April.
My name is Walker McMurdo, and I am a writer for the Willamette Week newspaper. I write in arts and culture about beer and food and sneakers and clothing and other such things. And I am also the media manager and social media manager for TechFest Northwest 2016.
You know, I was looking at your articles in the Willy Week, and I would say mostly you write about beer.
Yeah, it's been a big beer season. We just released our beer guide. So late December and January was a lot of heavy drinking. I was part of the...
But for research.
It was research. It was my job. All those were paid for by Willamette Week. Thank you very much. But, you know, it was a hard job to drink all those beers, go to all those brew pubs. But
right?
I know. I mean, it's for the love of... It's for the love of writing, for the love of journalism. You have to do what you have to do.
That's right. You have to. And so right now... What would you say are your top three favorite brews?
Top three favorite brews? I've been really enjoying the Commons' Urban Farmhouse, which is a really delicious farmhouse ale, which I believe is made in Portland. I've also been enjoying basically everything that Upright makes, Upright by the Lloyd Center in their facility in the basement of Foursquare Annex. They're great. They're in the basement, a tiny little brewery, makes some of the best beer in the city.
And it's the beer show now.
It's the beer show. We're just leave TechFest behind. And I've also really been enjoying Fatheads in the Pearl District, Mike Hunsaker. I interviewed him for one of his delicious beers, which he has been continuously winning awards for. And basically, you can go there and enjoy
small
anything.
Batch?
They're all small batch, yeah. They have they brew it all in their own facility, and they work really hard, and they make delicious beer.
Be jealous everywhere that's not Portland, right?
Yeah.
You can read more about beer. Walker writes for the Willy Week and on arts and culture, but mostly beer. He also, he's lived in New Zealand for 10 years and was the Magic the Gathering national champion in 2013. Now, I wanted to ask you, but was that a steep competition?
It's not easy. Magic, it requires a lot of practice, and I worked really hard that year, and I got quite lucky, and that paid off with some good results, and I got to travel overseas for that, which was a really fun thing to do when I was, 22 or 23. So that was fun. I was pretty lucky to get that, and I was very happy with it.
National champion, Magic. That's right. But really, I didn't invite you here to talk about beer, even though that's fun, or Magic.
And that's fun, too.
I can talk a lot about magic. Let me tell you.
Well, maybe we will. But right now, what we really want to talk about is Tech Fest Northwest coming up in April. Tech Fest Northwest is a gathering of leading thinkers, startups, and established companies that showcase the Pacific Northwest's talent and innovation in the technology field. That's a soundbite. So
that's right.
Describe to our listeners what Tech Fest looks like, sounds like, and what it's like to attend.
So Tech Fest, on its surface, looks like your normal tech conference. A bunch of people in an event hall. This year it's going to be at the Armory in the Pearl District. It's a great venue. What it looks like is a ton of entrepreneurs, thinkers, disruptors, and leaders coming together to make Portland Tech, Pacific Northwest Tech, as best as it possibly can. What we're trying to do is celebrate the culture and of Portland in general and tech specifically with this event. So what we're doing is really trying to showcase our city as well as what makes us a unique tech hub and all of the industries that are kind of centered around here that really show off the best that Portland has to offer.
In terms of technology, would you say it's growing in Portland? And what's the evidence of that, if that's true?
It's certainly growing in Portland. So the Portland metro area has for a long time been kind of one of the quiet stalwarts of the tech industry, especially out in Hillsboro. You have Intel and a large amount of hardware companies. Over the last few years, basically since 2010, the software and other areas in tech have been growing within the city and also within just the metro area in general. So I believe I read the statistic a few weeks ago. I think it was something like the tech workforce in Portland has grown by 82% since 2010. And that sounds crazy and that might be inaccurate, but I believe that it has grown massively since 2010 and it's bringing in a ton of jobs and a ton of money into the Portland economy.
That in some ways explains the growth in the housing, where people say there's a demand, but you don't really see it on the outside. Where is that demand coming from? It sounds like that could be an influencer.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the city has grown, its reputation has grown as kind of a less hectic and less expensive alternative to San Francisco or Seattle as a tech hub. There was an article in Bloomberg Businessweek a few weeks ago explaining how Portland's tech has exploded as a tech hub over the last little while.
Is there a main technology industry that, like web-based or surrounding or media or marketing, is there an aspect of that technology boom that is one that stands out more than another in terms of offering, you know, development and jobs? And
so historically, Portland's been a center in hardware. So that's like developing devices or like microchips,
printers,
and things like
chips,
that.
Right?
Yeah. So I mean, that's what's known as the, well, sort of in a way, and I'll get to that in a moment. So out in Hillsboro, they have Intel, which is the biggest name. So they make chips, and there's Tektronix, which manufacture equipment and stuff like that. So that what is called the Silicon Forest area has been historically the biggest tech area in Portland. But what we've seen over the last little while is a growth in the tech side of apparel and what is known as Internet of Things. So that is do you have a smartphone?
Of course.
Yes. So basically the idea behind the Internet of Things is it's the way of connecting your device, your physical devices, to make them more efficient and better react to your behavior. Yeah, there you go. You got a Fitbit. Robbie just showed me her Fitbit. That's an exact thing. It's a device that interacts with your other devices to make
it. A perfect example of what the Internet of Things, or your car.
Yeah, a car.
Or new cars.
A new car with a push button start. That's when you have the magical key fob that makes it work.
Bluetooth or whatever is built in there.
Yeah. So
even using handless phone, or that's the wrong word. Phones do not have hands.
Phones do not have hands, no. It would be a very unusual development.
It would probably be really popular, a handless phone.
Yeah, it would be great if you just like have it float.
It would just be
a
regular phone without hands.
Yeah, it would just be a phone.
Okay, that's just goofy. When we're talking about type of participants that you described, When we're talking about thinkers, developers, mm-hmm. and disruptors, what role does a disruptor play in a conference like this?
So what a disruptor does is they generally start as a small business in a particular industry. So for example, this year we have a man named Joshua Reich, who is the CEO and co-founder of a company called Simple. And what Simple is a bank that has no branches and no physical location. It's entirely online. So the idea with disruption is you take the bank business model and you remove all of the overheads from having to have physical branches and that old classic business model, and you replace it by just having your account entirely work online, have your ATMs or your debit card work with a bunch of different ATMs, have extremely good online customer service. And by doing that, you can lower fees. I think they have almost no fees for almost all of their transactions. So what that lets you do is offer a better product to the consumer because you're using a different paradigm to approach this business model.
Consumers who aren't overly paranoid about banking online.
Absolutely. In fact, it actually helps. I mean, that model helps people who are worried about funds. They actually have a really awesome feature which lets them, they have this feature on their website which lets you set up savings goals through their app. So what that lets you do is it helps you better manage your money on a month-to-month basis. And with that, features like that, and by just reducing overall fees, it really helps people who are really struggling for cash or who have to stick to a very strict budget. And because of the way that they're doing this, they're disrupting the traditional industry. They're allowed to make these concessions. And because they're operating on a smaller scale, it means that they get to really focus on both customers and making sure that costs are kept as low as possible.
So by removing the physical logistics of getting to the bank, they're competing with the traditional brick and mortar type of bank.
Yeah, absolutely.
They have to physically go to and...
You don't have to physically go to it. You don't have to... So that lets them charge less money because they don't have to pay rent in the building or have all the... I mean, they only have the centralized employees, so that's how that works.
Disruptor.
And that's one example. I mean, it works.
But we could also call them an innovator.
Yeah.
You know, because they're coming up with a new way of doing something. But I get that word. And I also get that, you know, industries develop their own jargon, mm-hmm. especially the technology industry. There's so many made-up words.
Well, sort of. I mean, disruptor, it's more of a specific take on innovator. So, I mean, it's the idea is you work in a way that traditional businesses wouldn't do that. So, like, I guess Dollar Shave Club would be, which is, we had the co-founder of Dollar Shave Club speak last year. So instead of selling, you know, their razors through supermarkets or their drugstores, you just buy them online. And that's completely different than how it's ever been done. So it's, I guess, disrupting and innovating the traditional business model.
Right. Well, speaking of speakers, mm-hmm. You have a lot of speakers at this year's event. Mm-hmm. One I noticed, Chip Conley, the head of global hospitality and strategy at Airbnb. Mm-hmm. Very controversial, Airbnb. I know a lot of people that use that and also who save a bedroom in their house or part of their house mm-hmm. to welcome people into Airbnb.
Yeah,
but we also have a lot of controversy about people buying houses or condos just to use for Airbnb, mm-hmm. and then other people feel shut out of the housing market because there's available housing, but not for them.
Sure.
Anyway, I thought it was very interesting. He'll be there. Tell us about some of the other speakers and presenters at this year's Tech Fest Northwest, and who are you excited about?
So we've got a lot of really great speakers. We've got a bunch of people coming in from Daimler Trucks. We have
Tell me why I should be excited about Daimler Trucks.
Daimler Trucks are building trucks that drive themselves. They have a whole team dedicated to building trucks that they're these manned vehicles that drive themselves. They can detect how far away other vehicles are from each other. They have these built-in safety features and sensors that can stop vehicles and alert the driver in case something happens, if there's something pulls in front of them, so on and so forth. And what that does is it makes these long road trips, this huge part of the American economy is based on large-scale semi-truck transport.
Right.
So what they do, what they're working on is making that safer and more efficient by having these trucks that basically, well, they drive themselves, and then they have someone working behind the wheel to make sure that nothing bad happens. But it makes these trips so much safer and more efficient.
So a human could intervene? A human could intervene in the process?
Yeah. I mean, they're basically like a manager. But it stops, you know, it reduces human error, and it makes the trip as efficient as it possibly can. So they've been working on this project for years. I just read something in Wired. They had a feature profile of them in Wired last year. They and one of their subsidiary companies.
This is Daimler Chrysler. The same Daimler Chrysler?
Daimler Trucks North America. They are okay. Yeah, they're headquartered in Portland, a German company who's North American.
Oh, okay. So unrelated to Chrysler.
I don't know. They might have the same parent company, but I'll double check.
I'm
not actually sure.
That's okay. Is this truck or the technology that they're using, is it related to the Google car in any way?
I believe they're developing their own interface. We
to
have
to find out. You have to go to TechFest.
You will have to go, and there's gonna be a lot. We have like three people from Daimler speak.
Are the speakers available, you know, to talk to after their presentations? Are they accessible?
Absolutely. Yeah, there'll be question and answer sessions, and I think they'll just be around as well. I mean, it's a pretty cozy Portland style event, so there's a lot of back and forth and interfacing with the speakers, and there'll be that interaction if you want to just go up and talk to them. A huge part of our event, it's not just like a conference where people go and sit down and listen to people talk and then go home. There's a ton of networking, a ton of events that we have planned afterwards.
Tell us about some of the other speakers.
All right, so our Daimler people are going to be, we're having Al Pearson, so that's our first speaker. He is the chief engineer of product validation, and so what he does is he works with, this is a great article in Wired you should really check out, where they speak to him about what he does. So he leads engineers and technicians in the field of computer-aided engineering. So he's basically the overseer of building the system that these self-driving trucks work on. There's also Steve Nadig. I hope I pronounced his name correctly. And so he's the chief engineer of mechatronics with Daimler, so he's also part of the system building process. And mechatronics is this really crazy field that has an appropriately crazy word, which is like the idea of the part of engineering that connects all these different computer systems and automobile manufacturing aspects. So it's really like the engineering that links all the other engineering fields together. So he's very important for this process because he's the person who is in charge of making sure all of these self-driving truck features work together as well.
So it sounds like these trucks are going to employ AI to some degree, that they would have to, because they have to be able to make decisions.
Oh, absolutely.
And kind of autonomously.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not human trucks, but, you know, they must have an amazing algorithm, you know, to take into account all the different road variables. Road variables that humans are able to process in the fraction of a second. So, you know, we're like seeing there's things moving all around us, the speeds are changing, lights up ahead, right? We're always projecting, hopefully, what's happening on the sides of us. So to imagine that there's a truck or a vehicle, any vehicle that could do that, it sounds kind of science fictiony, but I know that it's real.
It's really crazy. It's been years of work put into these, and it's been developed. The technology has been developing for, I think, decades. They have huge teams of people working on them. They released the first model last year, the Freightliner.
So are these vehicles actually being utilized on the road?
I think they're still in prototype process, but I think they have working prototypes now.
They have to have a human in it because everybody else in their cars would freak out.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
if they saw a truck without a human in it driving along.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they still need people to manage the vehicles to make sure that, you know, they don't just keep going. But the idea is to make them as safe and to get rid of as much of the human error as possible.
Right. Driver error, driver fatigue, something that we hear a lot about in the trucking industry is driver fatigue creating a lot of accidents. That and trying to go under an overpass that's too short.
Yeah.
For your truck. We saw that picture.
Yeah, so a lot of crazy things can happen.
Crazy things can happen.
Autonomous vehicles are one of our major themes this year, which is why we have so much about self-driving trucks.
Wow. This sounds pretty exciting.
One of the speakers I'm most interested in is a woman named Aja Bogdanov. Aja Bogdanov. She's the co-founder of a small company called Civil, which is based out of Portland. And I don't know how much time you spend on internet comments, looking at internet comments, but it has now developed, or I guess degenerated, to the point where the comment section is a shorthand for the worst that humanity and discourse has to offer. And what Civil is doing and what they've actually implemented on the Willamette Week website is a new comment system, which is a community-monitored way of ensuring that the worst of the worst is filtered out while ensuring that civil, normal, constructive discourse can still happen about the topics of, say, an article on our website or a blog post or something like that. It's a really interesting way, and I've used it many times to contribute. And the way it works is the system has you review other people's comments before you can post one of your own. And it actually has you review your own comment before you post it. So it really reinforces the idea of like thinking and considering about how we talk to one another in an anonymous forum.
So let's talk about this, because this is fascinating. Not always, but frequently, people who are posting comments or people who feel most passionately or about a subject, or they're people who just are like, what's the word for those people? Trolls.
Trolls.
They're trolls.
Toxic behavior, just not constructive. It's
bullies.
Just bullying, yes.
Okay, so she's created software or a process called Civil that allows users to review other reviews and then delete them if they think they're hostile, or how does it work? Because it sounds like a good idea, but it also sounds like it allows for people to censor you.
I mean, that's always a worry in any kind of these systems. The idea of having a community basically review these comments, I think theoretically there's a potential for some kind of censoring or quieting, but I think in reality, any kind of normal society that has any kind of normal internet community, which has balancing viewpoints, and which we definitely have in Willamette Week at least, and I think most forums will, it just really all it does is get rid of spam and just not deconstructive, non-helpful trolling or bullying.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, on our website, it's worked just fine. I see the exact same people that we saw 6 months ago when we were under our own system, except there's a lot less there wasn't that much in the first place, but there's no spam and there's just no garbage. It's really great. I'm sure she'll definitely speak to that on at TechFest Northwest, because that's just certainly a concern. But I think the only evidence, in its implementation, it's just been wonderful for us.
Well, that's really fascinating. I would love to hear how that works and how it works for the end user, and like the inside how it works and the outside how it works. That is fascinating. So you can volunteer. Are there volunteer opportunities with TechFest Northwest? Are there ways
absolutely.
That people can volunteer? And what could they do?
So we love our volunteers, and we've had a strong workforce of volunteers for the last 4 years we've been running TechFest Northwest. So we have people basically involved in every level of the organization of the event. So most of our volunteers make sure that people are in the right place at the right time, and they'll make sure attendees get to the place they need to go, and they make sure speakers are where they need to be at the right time. If you want to get in on volunteering, you can contact our wonderful program manager, Shauna Noah, and there's a link on our website, techfestnorthwest.com, or actually it's techfestnw.com. But if you want to email her directly, you can email her at shaunanoah@shaunanoah.com, which is shaunanoah@shaunanoah.com.
That's right. Easier, go to TechFest.
Easier to go to that.
NW.com.
If you just want to blast one off just straight away, you're so excited, then go and do that.
Well, it's fun to go to the website because then you can see all the speakers and kind of read little bios about each of them and have an idea what they're going to do. But there's a new thing that you're that they're doing at Pitch Fest.
There is a new thing.
Wait, did I say it already? Did I say Pitch Fest?
Yeah. There's a lot of fests.
So Tech Fest Northwest, that's the conference. And there's a conference within the conference called Pitch Fest. And tell us about that, because the first thing it made me think of, what I wanted to ask you, I said, was this, it sounds Shark Tanky.
It is. Well, part of it is Shark Tanky. So we conceptualize, it's called Pitch Fest Northwest, and we conceptualize it as a conference within Tech Fest Northwest. Specifically catered to startups who are either brand new or are looking to grow their business. So the way that PitchFest works is we're having companies apply, and by now the companies will have all applied. But we have had we had a whole bunch of small startups apply. And after a reviewing process, which is going to take place over next week, we're going to invite these companies to pitch themselves to a group of investors. So angel investors, which are the people that fund at the very basic level when you basically just have an idea, as well as venture capitalists, who are the people that help you, the people that fund you when you're trying to expand your company. Right. So we're having a panel of these people judge these pitches, which will be given by the participants. And then the best ones it's going to be a competition, so the best ones will win cash and one-on-one chances to speak to those investors in person, as well as other prizes.
Will they receive mentoring?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Those? So there's mentoring opportunities available. There's just networking and business opportunities. It's really great. We have two levels for PitchFest. So there's it's completely free to apply to regardless. But we have PitchFest Basic, which is we have a certain amount of spots set aside for completely free entry to PitchFest, and that comes with a free ticket to TechFest Northwest as well. So we're going to have a number of companies, which has not yet been decided.
And some of these companies are just ideas.
Most of them are already been implemented, so they've already been formalized and are, you know, in that very basic level.
Right.
But they're you know. The money is helpful, and
they have an idea for a product, but the product hasn't actually been manufactured yet, or something like that.
Basically, or they're working on it at a very small level, and they need more money to hire more people to make it happen. So we have PitchFest Basic, which is basically the pitch competition. We also have a second level of it called PitchFest Amplified. PitchFest Amplified is basically a full package conference that, as well as getting access to the pitch competition, you also get three tickets to TechFest Northwest. And we have demo space set up so you can showcase your company. And we also have a series of workshops, which are specifically catered to startups. So our main TechFest speakers are addressing topics such as the Internet of Things and self-driving vehicles. But our PitchFest speakers are going to be addressing topics such as diversity, why diversity is a good idea. We're going to have CEO mentors there to speak on being a good CEO. We're going to have employment experts there to help startups find the best possible people for their positions. We're having a whole bunch of people come up, and it's really just specifically catered to make sure that startups get the best bang for their buck.
Well, let's go back to the Shark Tanky part of it.
Sure.
So people will be pitching their ideas, products, or companies to these potential investors. Will there be an audience that can observe that, or is that just them?
I believe there's going to be an audience. Yeah, it wouldn't be any. I mean, I don't think it'll be any.
Because that would be fun.
It would be fun. Yeah, I mean, because people are going to be putting on presentations. They want to sell. But I think we are going to. It's going to be in a separate event hall, and it is going to be open to people, I think.
So we're not sure if it's going to be open to people.
Not sure, but I'm pretty sure it is.
We hope it's going to be open to people, because I don't myself. Shark Tank is one of my guilty pleasures. Mm-hmm. I love watching Shark Tank. It's real.
It is.
And the people who've been on it, they say it is exactly what you see on television. You go down this hall. You've never seen them before. They have no idea what you're going to present. You walk in and bam, that's your chance. So that is not staged. That's real.
Oh, it's 100% real.
I find it to be exciting. I'm entrepreneurial at heart. I am a freelancer like yourself, So, you know, I get that. And we've had a number of Portland companies appear on Shark Tank, and which is always exciting because you always feel patriotic, especially when it's a good product, you know, like maybe vegan cheese or something made from bees or honey. So probably more honey than made from bees.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm thinking. So I'm really excited about Pitch Fest, and I hope
it's going to be really cool.
It's possible, you know, to have an audience, but also be really interesting just to talk to the participants and the lenders and just to observe that whole process and to have a better understanding of entrepreneurialism in the Portland area.
Absolutely. I mean, we're having tons of Portland startups. Tons of Portland startups have already applied, and there's going to be plenty in Pitch Fest. We're also having some people coming from Canada. And we're going to have we have a few other international startups
like
who have applied.
NW Canada's Northwest.
Yeah,
if
it
counts. Our side.
Yes, I mean, so one of the overarching goals of Pitch Fest Northwest and Tech Fest Northwest is to like bring people to Portland. So we really want to have them here and get them connected with investor networks in Portland. So I mean, we'd less if we can get people to move their company from the Bay Area or from Seattle or from Vancouver, from wherever else to Portland. I mean, it just brings jobs and money to Portland. And
it's good when people have jobs.
Yeah, it's
right?
Pretty good.
Companies move here. It does provide opportunities for jobs if it attracts people from, you know, to those jobs from elsewhere. Well, so many people here are from elsewhere.
Yeah.
Or were. Now they're here.
Exactly. I'm one of those people.
Are you able to tell us some factors that would make one pitch more compelling than another?
We're leaving it to the investors to set up their own criteria. They're the real experts, and I'm sure they have their own very complicated systems for finding the best out of the best. So I'm sure that the quality of the pitch and the financial security of the company and the marketability of the idea are all very important concepts will be taken into consideration. But I bet there's also a lot of subtle things that me and my not venture capitalist mind cannot easily detect.
Will they be deciding right there? Or will they wait, discuss, commiserate, think about it, and decide later?
I think there's going to be a deliberation process. But they're not going to, like, you know, have a, I'm not sure what it would be, like a t-shirt cannon they fire at them, like, you got it. But I think there'll be a deliberation process. But yeah, we're going to be announcing winners at the end of the second day of the
okay,
event.
Okay, so you will know who got, that's really exciting.
And you're listening to The Digital Divide on KBOO Portland. We're not quite done with our interview yet. We just want to take a little break. You are listening to an interview with Walker McMurdo, myself. Walker is social media and PR representative for Tech Fest Northwest, coming up at the Armory April 25th and 26th. Of course, if you're listening to KBOO and you're listening to The Digital Divide, you know that every month we bring you exciting information about technology, new technology, and interviews with some of the most fascinating people in the world, including we've brought you interviews with Robert Mirapol, Sarah Vowell, Howard Rheingold, Howard Bloom. I love all the Howards. George Dyson, Brian Greene, Cory Doctorow. If you like what you hear on KBOO, go to the website now, kboo.fm, and click donate and support your community radio station. Even more exciting than that, you know, since 1968, KBOO has been a unique and vital resource for Portland and the Pacific Northwest. And you're tuning in because you value community, diversity, creativity, and truth in journalism. If KBOO has been an important part of your life, you can be an important part of KBOO's life by joining the 50-year anniversary committee. That's right. We are coming up on the big 5-0. KBOO, that's right, turns 50 in the year 2018. So we're forming a committee, and really want to invite members of the community to be participatory, because that's what it's about. So if you want to get in there and help, you can contact Monica or Becky at 503-231-8032. We're beginning the planning process now, so we hope to have a whole year to celebrate KBOO with exciting events and memorabilia. And wouldn't you feel great knowing that you were a part of forming and implementing what a great celebration. We're looking for folks who can contribute a strong energy and direction into planning for the 50th anniversary. Lend your love for KBOO to an inspired celebration of the station, one of the oldest independent non-commercial community stations in the United States. Again, if you're interested, contact Monica Beamer or Becky Myers. Let them know you'd like to help. Call 503-231-8032. We're going to get back to our interview after we take a little time out to listen to a nice little electronic mix from Subbase. Conscious Calling, New Awakening Remixes. This is the Akasha Remix. This is Robbie Yeaman with The Digital Divide, and I am talking today with Walker McMurdo. We're talking about the Tech Fest Northwest coming back this April.
Fifth year running.
And tell us the dates, location, time, while we're checking in here.
Tech Fest Northwest will be on April 25th and 26th, Monday and Tuesday. It's going to start at, or doors will open at 8 a.m. on Monday. Event's going to kick off at 9 a.m. on Monday with a welcome, and I think the festivities are going to start at 9:30. The event is at the Armory Building in the Pearl District. Beautiful venue, and it's going to be our fifth year running.
Now, I was reading the website, and I was reading articles about the fest, and so I've been reading that some people are comparing our Tech Fest to Austin's South by Southwest, which didn't start as a music festival. It actually kind of started in the same way as a technology showcase. Mm-hmm. And then it just kept it kind of expanding and turned into whatever you want to call it now, which just sounds like a hoot, a lot of fun, and a huge event that kind of goes on and sprawls throughout the whole city. And one of the things I was reading about this Tech Fest coming up is that
There will be more venues, and there'll be mini activities going on at different venues that are not the Armory in the evening. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we have this really awesome setup. So outside of the main speakers for TechFest Northwest and the speakers for PitchFest Northwest, we're having a series of smaller gatherings, which we're basically treating as these informal meetups led by local tech leaders. And the idea is to have these really intimate kind of small group at location at bars or look other locations like that throughout the city, places we can just kind of go and hang out with other like-minded people and talk about tech issues in Portland on a small group basis. So the idea is to really break it down from that like super formal, like conference-y level to a personalized, like, I really have this one specific concern and you are going to be, it's like, you're an expert in this area, you have this successful company, how did you solve this problem, or how did you work through this, or how do I hire this person, or what's the best way to approach this?
Well, these are amazing, unbelievable networking opportunities that are really hard to come by in any other way, like making a CEO or an expert in their field accessible to you in the bar, where you're like, hey, come on in and talk to us. And you're with a group of people who all kind of have that shared interest, and you get to meet each other. And those networking, that's really the key to, you know, to networking right there. And those opportunities don't always present themselves. So that's fantastic.
No, especially if you're from out of town or you're just kind of just getting started, just having those opportunities to have your questions answered or to just meet people who are in a similar spot to you, who you can just like befriend or work with in the future. It's really awesome. I mean, I think it's really a great way of just kind of breaking down some of the sometimes scary walls of being at a conference and not necessarily knowing anyone or a lot of people.
Right. From just being really an observer to being a participant in
a way. Absolutely.
So that's very exciting. Anything you want to share that we left out about Tech Fest coming up in April? That's Monday and Tuesday. So those days are a little bit different too. Mm-hmm. Usually these things are like Friday and Saturday or Saturday and Sunday. So having it in the early week, that's a little different from most conferences of this nature.
Yeah, well, it gives you a chance to take a long weekend off and explore Portland for people who are coming from out of town, or a chance to take a few days off and work with your friends or soon to be friends.
Who's the audience that doesn't want to miss this year?
Anyone who is interested in the way that the Portland tech community is developing, people who are entrepreneurs or freelancers and who work in tech like yourself, Rabia, or employees or people who just want to see how the tech industry in Portland is changing. Basically anyone who wants to come and check out this really awesome part of our community and see how it works and make friends.
It's all about making friends.
It is. It's supposed to, TechFest is fun. I mean, what we really definitely want, or the whole main goal of TechFest is to celebrate Portland entrepreneurs and entrepreneurship. So we really don't want it to be a stuffy thing, and it's not at all. I mean, it's just every year we've had incredible feedback. Our former attendees are so excited. It's just been great to be able to talk with people via Twitter and Facebook about the event and to share it with people. People have been so excited about it, and I'm really happy that we get to expand it to this level where it's now on this super personalized space where we can have people just kind of hanging out with each other in these smaller groups and have these way of helping entrepreneurs get their idea out to people who have money and who can help them grow their business and help people find the best employees for the companies. It's just really, I'm really excited about it, and I think it's going to be the best one.
I'm excited about it too. I was reading a little bit about the history in the one of the co-founders of it.
Rick Tarosi?
That's right. That initially he had just kind of started a blog, and from that kind of kept evolving and growing into other more tangible activities and things and places instead of just writing. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? On the history? Can you tell us a little bit about the history of the festival?
So it was started 5 years ago by Rick Tarosi, who is the founder of the Portland Incubator Experiment, PI, which is an accelerator. And it was done in conjunction with Willamette Week through our, basically the program's runner, Mark Zussman, who's also the editor-in-chief at Willamette Week. And we started it as a way of showcasing Portland as a growing tech community. And back then, it was, things were a lot smaller than they were now. So we had this idea of treating it like the South by, basically the South by Southwest of tech, and to have it be more than just a something you go to a Holiday Inn and sit with a bunch of people, and really show a way of showcasing Portland, not only just as a tech center, but also as a cultural center.
Right.
So it started like that, and we've basically just been growing and working on this very small scale. We have a really small team. I think there's about 5 or 6 people working on it.
Wow.
So we've really been learning as it's been growing, from basically on a case-by-case basis. So it's been a lot of fun seeing how it's developed, and we're getting bigger. We get bigger speakers every year, and we get more people every year, and we expand it every year. So it's really been kind of this almost DIY level event that's really kind of expanded into this awesome celebration of Portland.
That is amazing. It's so exciting. Don't miss it. If you're into technology, if you're curious, if you're an entrepreneur, you will learn how other entrepreneurs are running their companies, and you will learn things and know more.
If you're an entrepreneur, if you like computers, if you like trucks that drive themselves, if you like cell phones that can control your thermostat or your smoke detector, we have someone named Aubrey Thalen coming in.
I wish my phone could change the batteries in my smoke detector.
Yeah, well, we got this really cool speaker coming in from this company that has these. I mean, it's great. I was roasting chicken the other night, and it made my smoke alarm go insane, and it was horrible. And I found that one of our speakers works for this company that makes a smoke detector that just kind of like sends you a text. When you're, it's like there's smoke in your kitchen. You can just like turn your thing off for 5 minutes.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, so it doesn't, you know, you don't have to do the like trying to slam dunk the
Internet of Things.
The Internet of Things. You don't have to. Our smoke detector's way up in our above our doorway or above a door frame, so I have to like slap at it and jump to try to turn it off, and while it's shrieking at me. So that,
yes, jumping is, I can't even touch it if I jump. Very exciting. Thank you so much, Walker,
welcome,
for joining us today. You can read Walker's writings mostly on beer at the Willamette Week. He'll also be doing PR and social media for TechFest. People will be able to meet you there. You'll be live tweeting, live blogging about it.
There'll be a lot of live tweeting and live blogging. Probably you can follow TechFest Northwest on Facebook. Just Google TechFest NW. You can go to Twitter at TFNW. You can follow us on Instagram, TechFestNW. Go to our website, TechFestNW.com.
Right, to learn more, to learn about tickets and mm-hmm. volunteer opportunities, to see who the speakers are going to be. Also, will there be a showcase of local technology, like in a classic conference style where people have little booths set up, you could meet people or see what they're doing?
Yeah, that's part of PitchFest Northwest, our demo alley. That's going to be showcasing all kinds of companies. We're going to have people who are going to be in there just from local businesses where we'll be showing off their sweet stuff as well.
They'll be showing their sweet stuff. You
showing
do not want to miss that, TechFest NW. Right. You can make something like TechFest NW sound delicious mm-hmm. and a little bit sexy.
Yeah. N-dubs.
N-dub. Right. So that is, again, April 25th and 26th at the Portland Armory, TechFest NW. Not only is it 2 days of fascinating conferences, workshops, and speakers, but there'll be evening activities where you can get together in small groups at local venues, probably pubs, where there's beer, and get to meet some of the speakers and other people who are participating, like you. Amazing networking opportunity. Don't miss it. Thanks so much, Walker,
for
being here.
Thank you for having me,
Rabia. All right. Well, we will hopefully see you at TechFest
NW. You will.
All right. Bye-bye. And you've been listening to The Digital Divide on KBOO Portland. Coming up next, Moving On. Dan will be filling in today. Be sure and tune in The Digital Divide every second Friday of the month at 11 a.m. This cold, this water, this sun, this daughter, this day. Yeah.
what I thought I knew. This what I thought was true. This I understood. This in the deep wood. This there I stood, a child so thin. This on a sudden square. This down the dirty stairs. This to see the table set. This with gold.